Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday night. You know what that means. It is time for some J&J on the Wrestling Inc. podcast as we talk AEW Dynamite, plus all the top news in the world of professional wrestling, sports entertainment. Hope everybody's doing good wherever you're at here in the U.S. or around the world, much like my co-host tonight, who's, of course, north of the border in Toronto. He is the former sports entertainment WWE referee for over 20 years. He ran the road doing that. Crazy story. He's got a book about it. I suggest you check that out as well. He is the one, the only, Mr. Jimmy Corderas. Jimmy, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, buddy. Glad to have you back. And oh my God, we're back again.
And he sings Backstreet Boys. I mean, what a well-rounded ref.
Hey, you know what? A little bit of everything.
How you holding up? You like me. We are our hockey dreams are once again done for a season.
Oh my goodness, it is so disappointing because, like I've mentioned before, as one of the few people who is still alive, the last time the Maple Leafs won the cup, it was yes, I get it, they were facing Tampa Bay, you know, the defending champs and blah blah blah, but at the same time, after they get eliminated, they say that they're not going to make any changes anywhere in their coaching staff or anything like that, or GM, whatever the case may be. And I'm thinking to myself, this is the right time to make changes. Don't say so, unless you pull a swerve and you just say that, and then all of a sudden, guess what? Boom, out of nowhere. But they need changes on their defense for sure.
What year was it? When was the last time they won the cup?
1967. Yes, I'm dating myself.
Okay.
Yeah. Dave Keon hoisting that cup.
67. Wow. I think that was the year the Capitals franchise started? No, they were later.
No, they were later than that.
They were early 70s.
Yeah, I believe they were 70. I want to say 72 or 74.
Yeah, 74, I think. Yeah. Crazy. All right. Well, enough of that puck talk. Jimmy, the wrestling world, the world is going round and round. Both the big ticket. I mean, there's plenty of news. So, again, go to WrestlingInc.com round the clock. Tons of news, tons of exclusive interviews. So a lot for you to have there. But the two news stories we're going to talk about here are basically just kind of continuations of stories that are just evolving every day, both which we touched on a little bit Monday night after Raw. But again, they continue to grow. The first being is that ESPN reported on Monday that Ric Flair at 73 is going to get back in the ring. He's going to get back in the ring on July 31st. In Nashville, same city that they're doing SummerSlam in the day before. So they're going to kind of capitalize off of the fans there. They're going to have StarCast attached to everything. But basically, Rick's going to get, he's going to have a match. It's believed it's probably going to be a 6-man tag. Now, the rumor was that it would be Rick and maybe FTR, possibly. I think he gets signed if Tony Khan will sign off of that against maybe like the Rock and Roll Express and Ricky Steamboat. The idea being, you know, Steamboat, Flair one more time. Haven't been in the ring together since like 94. You know, Steamboat at 69, but still in tremendous shape as he's always been. But the new wrinkle to this now, the new piece of news here, is that Ricky Steamboat is saying that he is not he got offered it, but he's declining it. So the former NWA World Heavyweight Champion confirming reports that he was approached for the match at the event. However, stated he would not be doing the match. This was during a High Spots Superstore signing. Fightful was transcribed a lot of this and putting it out there. said he gave it some serious thought. He said a lot of respect to the guy in the ring. I thought about it for a week and just recently declined on it. He goes on and has a much bigger quote. I'll basically just say, he goes on to say he loves his Mania 25 memory with Chris Jericho back in back when he did that, and how the crowd was chanting, "You still got it," and how it really came off well. And he kind of just wants to let that be his last memory, let the fans have that be the last memory of him versus, you know, potentially, you know, putting a scar on that if this performance doesn't live up to that. So, Jimmy, I haven't got to talk to you at all about this story off air or on air. Give me your reactions to both ends of it, to the fact that Rick is going back in the ring at 73 and Ricky Steamboat's decision to stay out of this.
It's kind of weird to explain. It's difficult because I am not shocked that Ric Flair wants to get back into the ring, because anybody who knows Ric Flair probably thinks that in his mind, and I hate to put it this way, if Ric Flair were not only to end his career, but would to end completely, he would want it to be in the ring. Yeah. It almost feels that way. And I hate to sound morbid about it, but Ric Flair just loves being in the ring that much. And don't get me wrong, I think Ricky Steamboat loves being in the ring just that much. But he also, I want to say, I believe in his heart, thinks that he went out in a way that makes him happy. And what better way to do something, to end something that you love, a profession that you love, than to go out the way that Ricky went out, where fans were chanting, "You still got it," and the whole bit, and having a great match and going out happy. And that's the main thing. It just feels like to me that Ric Flair still isn't happy with where he is in his career. And I don't know what he's looking for. I honestly don't, because when you talk icons in wrestling, Ric Flair is one of the first guys mentioned when you speak about icons. And Ricky Steamboat, I'm a Steamboat guy, because way back to the Steamboat Youngblood days. And he was tremendous, you know, and like I said, went out on a high note. And I respect the fact that he doesn't want to get back in the ring because of that. But at the same time, I kind of feel for Ric Flair, because I feel like he's still searching for something.
I mean, I probably agree with that. But the bad news is, Jimmy, is that if he is searching for a better way to go out, I mean, look, he had the storybook ending to go out super kicked by one of the other all-time greats, you know, in the generation behind him, and Shawn Michaels out of WrestleMania. And that could have been that. Now, obviously, you know, retirement and wrestlers don't really go hand in hand. It's never over, brother. It's always a work, brother. You know, he ends up having he fights for TNA Impact, and you know, and I'm sure money was a motivation at the time, whatever situation was. But it's like, Vince isn't going to give you a WrestleMania match. I don't know, like, what he can keep chasing. And then to the point of Ricky turning it down, I mean, quite frankly, you know, I'm sure this event would pay respectfully. But it's not like a Mania payday or anything like that. So I could see Ricky deciding not to do that. And I don't know what, I mean, to me with Rick, it's like, what do people want to see if you're going to go to something live and you want to hear the music, you want to hear him woo, you want to see him strut, you want to see him do his catchphrases, and he can do all that. He doesn't need to have a match. So right. I don't really know what I need to see out of Ric Flair here.
No, I don't either. And yes, I get the whole adage that he, you know, Ric Flair is old school, and in old school, you go out putting someone else over. You go out elevating the next generation. And that's exactly what he did at WrestleMania with someone like a Shawn Michaels. He elevated Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania. And the same with Ricky Steamboat with Jericho. You know what I mean? So I guess I don't want to say his career has been unfulfilled, because he's done what no one else has ever done in this business. But it just feels like it feels like it's not enough for him. I don't know what it is he's searching for again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's that. I mean, look, I mean, it was news in the past year. I mean, his fifth wife, Wendy, Fifi the maid, he and her split. So, I mean, five wives, there's the old saying and song, it's cheaper to keep her. So I don't know if that's
there was a joke back in the day going around that he was trying to break his world championship record with wives.
I don't know. So we'll see. So now the next part of the story is who is in there as the quote unquote, you know, legend counterpart.
Right.
Opposite Rick, because Rick's, you know, we've seen videos of Rick training, and again, you know, he is, so Rick's doing this. So I'm trying to think of who else, you know.
I know who would be the perfect fit for, in my opinion, but I don't think he can do it because FTR loves this guy so much.
Oh, Brett?
Yeah. Can you imagine Brett? And Brett has a history with Ric Flair, defeating him in Canada.
Saskatchewan, that's right.
It's for the WWE or WWF Championship back in the day. So you could tie those knots together. There is a story there, you know. But
I'll give you a better one, though. I'll give you a better one if just for the sake of, like, actually, because I love Brett, and I was privileged as hell in 2014, 2015 to managing our good buddy RJ City. RJ. He's going up against Harry Smith Jr., British Bulldog Jr. Brett's managing him. So I got to be a counterpart to Brett, which was one of the loudest pops would come in front of a couple thousand people. So, like, I love Brett. So, but Brett, he just can't do much. Nor should he. Right. So I would say, again, Tony Khan had to sign off on this. Put Sting on the other side of it. Sting has all the history with Flair. I mean, it was Sting and Flair, I believe, in TNA. It was Sting and Flair was the last Nitro. So much history there. We're seeing Sting every Wednesday night. He's more than capable to do a little bit. I would go that route if they could get all parties to sign off. And Tony Khan obviously being a big part of that.
That's a good call. Like you said, they do have a huge history together, and they're the two guys that you can get away with again, not having to do much.
Yeah,
you know. So that's a good call. I like that.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll keep our eye on it. Again, we love, if you have any super chats, please send them in. We are, I've seen a couple come through. We'll definitely get to them, especially depending on what they're about when the time is right. All right, so that's the one story. Here's the other story. This one, I'm sure, this one's not going to be going away for a while. So by now you've heard Sasha Banks and Naomi did not appear on Raw as they originally were scheduled to be. Again, you can read all the different updates to this on Wrestling Inc. Basically, we know, and Jimmy, I want to get your fresh take on this. It seems that there was a creative dispute, namely, it seems from Sasha with her and Vince that just kind of went on, it seems, all day or what have you. Show's time to start. Vince, of course, in the gorilla position, it's ready to do the live show. And sometime after that show started, the creative hadn't changed in Sasha's favor to what she wanted. This is all, again, what we're gathering, and so she wasn't going to do that, so she just left the building. Her and Naomi, WWE put out a press release, a very, very unique press release for WWE, giving a far more detailed side of the story than they ever usually would dealing with internal matters with talent like this. Yes. So that's its own thing. The latest report from Fightful Selects is giving some insight on how people backstage in WWE are reacting. Now, I stress this because Fightful Select stressed this. This is just individual people Fightful Select was able to get to talk to them, of course, remaining anonymous. So this doesn't necessarily mean this is what everybody thinks. This is just an example of some temperature taking. They say, like, a consensus among some talent who they talk to is that leaving during a show you were scheduled for before that segment is something that is likely to lead you to getting buried throughout the show. So explaining, you know, commentary was kind of doing that. Vince probably instructing them the lines. An established WWE star responded to the comparisons of Steve Austin walking out in 2002, pointing out that, look, Austin walked out long before airtime. Fightful Select also spoke to a female star who, quote, didn't see anything particularly egregious worth leaving the show over, but understands creative frustration. The report suggests that several people in WWE who are supportive of Naomi and Sasha's stance, but the much larger population lies in the not being happy with creative is fine, walking out is fine, but walking out during the show isn't fine. And there's so more. Literally every temperature is taken here. Jimmy, you were there for over 20 years. You saw disputes. You were there when Austin famously took his ball, went home, which of course, like, this gets compared to.
Right.
What do you make of this?
I'm not a big fan of it. I don't like it. I think it's, you know, Corey Graves said the line, and I'm sure he was fed the line, that very unprofessional of them to leave. And I agree with that. And I know people are going to say to me, but you're not, you've never had to deal with creative and blah, 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 and all this. That's not the point. The point is you are paid to do a job. If you disagree with what's going on, it's not like you have a union rep. And I don't want to get into this whole union debate in pro wrestling, because it ain't happening. Sorry, guys, it ain't happening. They are independent contractors. You sign a contract. to perform a duty, something they instruct you to do. Like, and if you don't like it, you can complain about it afterwards, but at the same time, you are given a job to do. And, it, you know, comparing it to the Austin thing, Austin did leave in the afternoon. And they knew that, oh boy, he's gone. He's not coming back. We got to do something today. Leaving during the show, just, it doesn't sit well with me. It's very unprofessional. Obviously, as people know, this isn't the first time that Sasha's taken her ball and gone home. And now the big debate, is this a big elaborate work to get people interested in what's going on and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. You know, I joke around and kid that, oh, well, they didn't use their shoot/real names in the press release. They used their working names. But at the same time, they said things in that press, statement that they don't normally do. I mean, obviously they do stuff on the network where they go behind that fourth wall and peek behind the curtain and stuff like that. But to do it in a press release and in a statement the way they did, man, they are not happy. And it could have been handled a lot better, a lot more professionally, in my opinion. I think
I'm with you. I like on the one, you know, that's my thing. On the one hand, it's like, you know, it's one thing to, you want to stand up for yourself or your, or mm-hmm. your peers. And like, you know, and we've always heard Vince kind of likes a little bit of confrontation, likes being challenged. If done in the right way, he can maybe raise his level of respect, but I don't think leaving during the show is going to win you any points of but yeah, it's like you said, you're paid to do a job. At the end of the day, you're paid, you're there mm-hmm. to do a job. And that's something I think even generationally is what people think is acceptable and the rules are is getting mm-hmm. constantly altered. Some people are saying that they weren't familiar or didn't get to hear or read the statement that the WWE put out. So real quick, I'll give it again. It's not mm-hmm. It's not too lengthy. So so WWE sent this to Wrestling Inc. And several other outlets, and they said this. Everything here I'm quoting. When Sasha Banks and Naomi arrived at the arena this afternoon, they were informed of their participation in the main event of tonight's Monday Night Raw. During the broadcast, they walked into WWE Head of Talent Relations John Laurinaitis' office with their suitcases in hand, placed their tag team championship belts on his desk, and walked out. They claimed they weren't respected enough as tag team champions, and even though they had 8 hours to rehearse and construct their match, they claimed they were uncomfortable in the ring with two of their opponents, even though they'd had matches with those individuals in the past with no consequence. Monday Night Raw is a scripted live TV show whose characters are expected to perform the requirements of their contract. We regret we were unable to deliver as advertised tonight's main event.
Yeah, it's very telling in just that statement. And again, they were uncomfortable with two of the people they were performing with, even though they performed with them before. If there's something you're uncomfortable in a match and with and don't want to do it, then you voice your opinion to that person. Say, hey, look, I don't want to do this. I'm not comfortable doing this. That's all it is. And if you're not comfortable with the creative direction, you handle that differently. You go and you discuss it. You tell them why you're not happy with whatever direction they're going in. And if you still disagree with what they have to say, or if they disagree with you, you fulfill your duties as you are paid to do, as you have signed a contract to do. And then if you feel like walking out, walk out not during the show and leave them hanging and having to scramble, even though it didn't feel that way. I thought they handled it fairly well considering the circumstance, but that's not the point. The point is you don't walk out in the middle of your job. Yeah. Finish your job, and then if you're not happy, do what you got to do.
You say they handled it well. It sounds like their experience on changing things on the fly. It's or events mm-hmm. change his mind or what have you. So they've had some reps there.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's going to be very interesting. And I don't think she's going to get released, because I don't think they're going to want to send that message that, oh, if you just act this way, we're going to get you out of your contract.
No, but you will not be looked upon mm-hmm. favorably by the office. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And you look at someone like a Naomi who's married to one of the Usos, and you know, there was a potential bloodline tie-in there that could have happened down the road as well.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many things that could have happened that may not happen now.
You know, and that's, I'll close on this, if you have anything to respond to this. I always say that about being in a tag team. Tag team wrestling is a beautiful art when it's done right. Mm-hmm. But it always is a risk, I always think, you know, to be in a tag team, because you're married to that person professionally. So if they get hurt, that possibly affects that now affects you. If they mm-hmm. get heat, that could, you know, like, so yeah, Naomi, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it sounds like this is more of a Sasha charge in terms of what mm-hmm. was happening. I don't know if Naomi is just along for the ride to support her friends since they were a tag right. team. And what happens now is the tag team belts. I mean, like, you know, what's the champions? I don't know.
Exactly. Do you hold a tournament or whatever? Right. You know, like if you disagree, put them through the barbershop window. What the heck?
There you go. Well, it's going to be a very interesting summer coming up as, you know, of course, mm-hmm. we have Money in the Bank. We have stadium shows and all kinds of stuff. Plus, we have Sweaty Sack Summers approaching. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Sweaty Sack Summer. The fellas, you know what I'm talking about. It's approaching, and it's time for you to prioritize the comfort of your crotch. That's why the Kings of Crotch Comfort Manscaped have spent 2 years designing the most comfortable boxer briefs out there. I've had the honor of testing out these new boxers, and I can say it's the softest fabric of any underwear, and I mean that. Look, chafing could be a real thing. Heat, skin, friction, don't want none of that. You want to be comfortable with what you're wearing, and this is a winner right here. So breathable that it's like the gills of your groin. They even trademarked the jewel pouch, so you know how it's serious. I think it's time you invest in your family jewels. So let your bulge breathe and get 20% off, of course, and free shipping when you use the code WINC20 at manscaped.com. I mean, like, you know, let's say you're on a date and your partner catches that manscape on the waistband of the underwear. I mean, it's almost guaranteed, Jimmy, it's going to raise the people's eyebrow and act like a billboard on the highway to Pleasure Town. You got to get you some. The new underwear is what you got to get. Thanks. This is all thanks, of course, to Lawnmower 4.0. You know, that's what's doing all the right grooming underneath of those mm-hmm. the comfortable underwear. Best electric trimmer. We've talked about it for months on months. Below the waist grooming. It is the best tool out there. Yeah. The trimmer offers skin safe technology designed to trim hair on loose skin. Of course, they have all kinds of other ways to help you. Like we said, they have the nose trimmers, the ear trimmers. Mm-hmm. Of course, again, they have the jewel pouch, a pouch designed to cradle your boys mm-hmm. in their own special space, lined with perforated performance fabric to keep them well ventilated. Basically, just imagine your balls sipping a pina colada, chilling on a hammock on some tropical beach. That's the type of treatment you're giving yourself. Tagless waistband hugs your body without digging into it, lays flat against your skin to reduce chafing. Front fly opening gives easy access and makes the bathroom breaks quick and efficient. You can choose from an arrangement of designs and colors and sizes, going from small all the way up to 3X for all the big guys out there. Again, manscaped.com. Use the code WINC20. Save 20% plus free shipping. I can tell you, boxers are very comfortable. Give them a try. Got many different colors of them. It's the way to go.
Absolutely. It's like being wasted away again in Margaritaville.
All right. What do you say? What do you say we get into some dynamite?
Sure.
I mean, I think that's... That had happened tonight, so we got to talk about that.
Yeah, that's right. It did happen tonight.
Hang on, I'm trying to find something real quick.
But I will say this, you know, I thought just to start things off really quickly in a nutshell, I thought it was a fairly solid outing from the guys and gals at AEW tonight.
Yeah, let me real quick before we go to Dynamite, I will, this last super chat did sneak in here from Brandon Hall back to the WWE issue. $10, mm-hmm. thanks, Brandon. He says, I have a few issues. The first thing is, was the match really advertised? Also, why do we continue to take everything that WWE says as absolute that it actually happened that way? Well, the six-pack challenge match was advertised. They mm-hmm. started off the show talking about it. They had a graphic and everything. Mm-hmm. So that was advertised. So that's true. I will say, Brandon, the other thing, some of the things in the statement that they put out, it's their version. Especially the whole,
there's always two sides. Yes.
Yeah. Especially the part about the girls having an issue with two performers in the match mm-hmm. that, you know, that's pretty bold to put out there.
Yeah.
So,
it's hard to decipher unless you're there to witness anything, whose side is being more genuine with their presentation. But at the same time, obviously both sides view it from a different point of view and, you know, WWE to put it out there publicly, if they are fudging the numbers, so to speak, they're opening the door for some possible repercussions. So they have to be careful with their wording as well.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you put out a release like that. I mean, that's, that can find its way to court, if it needs to, if things would ever get to that point. So,
yeah.
All right. So, yeah. So we'll, again, continue to watch that story evolve mm-hmm. on the WWE side of things. Yeah. Let's jump over to AEW. Of course, Wednesday night Dynamite. Coming to you from Houston, Texas. Very loud crowd there. And I got to say, too, you know, they have their staging areas. They always have. They do this sometimes, depending on, and I like this. It's something that something that WWE never did in their setup. I like the elevated ramp way that goes all the way and meets that is of equal to the ring apron. Mm-hmm. I've always, you know, WCW did that some. You know, it's an NWA thing. ECW even did it. I've always liked that
look. Maple Leaf Gardens back in the day. Prior to it becoming a WWF/WWE territory, they had a ramp. Mind you, when the boys came out through the curtains, they came up a set of stairs to a ramp, and they walked to the ring, level with the ring.
I've always liked it because I love how much more seen the talent can be.
Exactly.
Because if you've ever been to a wrestling show, if you're sitting somewhere else on the floor, it can be tough to see somebody coming down the aisleway, depending on where mm-hmm. you are in the building, and you might, you know, you're just missing little things. So I love having them elevated and having them walk and then be equal to the mm-hmm. the height of the apron. So just a little thing. Yeah. One of my little.
It's actually a bigger than a little bit bigger than a little thing, because, like you said, the talent is elevated and they are seen and they are more visible by everyone, not just the people at home.
Yeah. So something. So they don't do it every time they do it. It seems it's arena pending sense to do.
Yeah.
But I like it. I think it's a nice touch. But yeah, we start hot as they always do. Mm-hmm. The first of what's going to be several of the Owen Hart Memorial Tournament matches. And one of the first of two matches that has a mystery opponent. Samoa Joe, we know he comes out and he's going to be going up against the Joker. Who's the Joker? Flashes on the screen, Johnny Elite. Now, I will admit, as soon as I saw Johnny Elite, John Morrison came into my head, because mm-hmm. I'm very, you know, I like that talent, and I love the gimmick that he's took all around with him, that he's always altered his name based upon, you know, he's Johnny Nitro, he's been Johnny Mundo. Right. You know, I've always liked that he's altered his name. So that's where my mind went. But it didn't take long as I start surfing the world of Twitter, of the honest mistake that some people might have made. Jimmy, I don't know if you did this, but I saw many people who thought that Johnny Elite was Johnny Gargano, Johnny Wrestling.
Ah.
And now it was also teased too, because Tommaso Ciampa posted something on social. He posted a picture with Johnny Gargano and his wife,
right.
And Ciampa's caption was "just hanging with two jokers." So that got people buzzing. So I don't know if it was an intentional troll job here. I don't think that, you know, because I think Johnny is a legit guy to, you know, Johnny Elite, John Morrison was a very worthwhile guy to have out there mm-hmm. as a mystery opponent. But right. I could see people's confusion.
No, I could understand that confusion, but I'm like you. I thought Johnny Nitro. As soon as I saw Johnny Elite, I said, John, it's Morrison. Yeah. And that's a good get for AEW. And I get it that people say, oh, here's an ex WWE guy. But John is more than that. He's well traveled. He's been around the world. He's done, yes, he was more visible in WWE than anywhere else, but at the same time, he's a good get, and he can help get any talent in any match over. And what I love most about this going in against Joe, yes, we know that Johnny can fly. He only flew sparingly in this match when he needed to, and he showed that he could wrestle and hang with a guy like Joe in the ring in a wrestling match as well. And
yeah.
He's a real, real well-rounded talent.
A great point by you. And Joe is just leveling him with some chops.
Yeah.
Some sick sounding chops. Mm-hmm. Joe does kick out. Johnny goes for the 450, hits it. Came up a little bit short. I'm going to suspect too, because, again, talking about differences and Johnny being a high flyer, you know, those WWE ropes, a lot more spring to them. So I'm mm-hmm. almost wondering if, like, you know, he had Joe set up where he probably maybe would in a WWE ring, in the sense that that's where he's going to land. But those AEW ropes that are that more traditional elevator cable wrapped in rubber, there's not that much bounce. And so he, you know, he didn't have enough spring to him in that flip. So
that's a good call, because people don't realize the difference between the cable.
Yeah.
The cables and the actual rope, which WWE has actual rope.
Right. Because yeah. our RVD did the reverse. Mm-hmm. He came from ECW had the cable like AEW does. RVD came over to Raw and he went to do his 5-star splash, is used to having to push off so much more on him. It's completely missed this guy, overshot himself.
Yeah. There is an adjustment period.
Yeah, but you know, but the commentary kind of, I thought, bailed it. They said, oh, he came up a little short. He might have not got all of it. Joe kicks out. Joe ultimately is going to hit the muscle buster to get the win. So Samoa Joe advances here in this tournament. Before we get to the shenanigans that happened real quick after the match, we haven't seen the graphic. I haven't seen it that says Johnny Elite is All Elite. So I don't know if he's I don't know if he's there to stay or if it was just a kind of a one time thing or you know what that's going to be.
Well, I hope he's there to stay because he's a talent that they could use and need. Yes, they are pretty full over there, especially for the time permitting. But he's a talent that they can definitely use. And you talked about the shenanigans that went on afterwards. The only thing I didn't like about that happening is it took away from the, you know, it made you kind of forget about the return of Johnny Elite.
I agree. Yeah, Jay Lethal, yeah. Sonya Dutt, and Satnam Singh come out. They start attacking Joe. And I agree. It was a little overbooked.
Yeah, it made it feel like an afterthought. And if there's one thing that AEW, I think, in my opinion, is guilty of doing far too often on Wednesday nights is overbooking, trying to get too many people in, as we'll talk about later on in the show, in our show here, that they just sometimes just try to get too much in. And just, sometimes you need to let stuff breathe.
Well, but I got to wonder if that becomes like a, you know, if you have all these guys and girls who you're paying each week, whether you're using them or not, like they have these downside guarantee, like if you almost feel obligated, like, oh God, I got to get them out there. So I'm not wasting my investment this week.
No, I get that. But at the same time, if you've got a lot of stuff that you're using on web, like their AEW Dark, they have how many matches on AEW Dark and stuff like that, you know, if you feel like you need to use them elsewhere.
Yeah. Top pro for you games. J&J Security are as iconic as LaBar and Corderis. And he goes on to say this J&J is better. Well, thank you.
Thank you. That's awesome.
Appreciate it. We got a super chat here. Apox Music, Canadian $6.99. Been listening to you for years now, guys. Big fan. Thank you. He goes, you think Double or Nothing will be the biggest AEW pay-per-view, and what will steal the show? You know, I mean, it certainly could be the biggest pay-per-view to date. Their pay-per-views, especially as they continue to acquire major talent like Punk and Danielson and such, you know, they continue setting new records internally. I mean, they're going to be a three-year-old company next week, I believe it is. So, you know, they're still in that phase to keep setting new records. So it certainly could. I think there's some things on the top of the card that I'm mainly the title match, which we'll get to here in a minute, that I don't know if it's been built as well as it could have been. So I'll be curious how, you know, the Dynamite next week is in Vegas. It's in the same city as where the Double or Nothing is. So I'll be curious how the final push is next week in terms of buy the show, buy the pay-per-view, stream the pay-per-view. But in terms of stealing the show, I mean, I don't know. There's so much juice behind this Wardlow MJF deal. This is going to be some fun business here.
Yeah, that's definitely a contender. There's also a tag team match that's going to happen that I think could potentially steal the show as well with some old friends of mine.
We will get to it. Thank you for that. All right, up next, we see backstage Jeff Hardy being interviewed, and we find out that he is medically cleared after that crazy, crazy finish in the match he had last week with Darby Allin. He's cleared to wrestle, and just as he's talking about adrenaline's going to keep him fired up, the Young Bucks come in, and they start kind of mocking him, saying he's a shell of himself and what have you. Matt fires back and calls them Hardy cosplayers, and Matt Hardy makes a threat to them not to show their face and interfere during Jeff Hardy's match against Adam Cole. Of course, this being another Owen Hart tournament match. So they're kind of planting those seeds for those Bucks Hardys.
Yeah, they're planting them hard, too, and they're watering them a lot. And you know what? Again, you talk about old school versus new school. This is the perfect match for something like that. You know, the Bucks are sort of like an offshoot of what the Hardys were, kind of, sort of. You know, and developed into their own thing. And, you know, it's like, they've had their matches in the past, but bringing them to national TV, I think, is a good thing. And I think it'll bring out the best in the Hardys as well as Matt and Jeff, as well as the Bucks.
Yeah, I mean, this would be the biggest stage, the biggest eyes on them to have that. Mm-hmm. The Bucks, you know, that's what's cool about the Bucks. The Bucks are like a if the Hardy Boys and the Rockers had,
yeah,
you know, children that were going to be attacking. That's what I think it is.
There you go. Yeah, that's a good comparison. I like that.
So we will follow up with that a little bit later on. Mm-hmm. Jeff Hardy and Adam Cole is the main event of the show. Mm-hmm. CM Punk out on commentary. He is sitting there to watch his upcoming opponent, the champion mm-hmm. Hangman Page, in action. I want to make sure I get the pronunciation right, because it's the first time I'm saying it out loud. Kunose Takeshita, Japanese talent. He's appeared on some AEW program before. This is my first time watching the match of him.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I just want to talk about him for a second before we can do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
He was very impressive.
Yes.
Tall kid, probably 6'3", 6'4", easily. Seemed like mm-hmm. he's a tall, well-built kid. Mm-hmm. He's worked a lot of Japanese talent as they were rattling off during the match. Very athletic.
Yes.
Brought his stuff, laid it in, looked good. But one of the big things I love, too, he sold. The facials, when he's selling and he takes the time to grimace and fall, like his selling was better than I see a lot of. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to first off say to this guy who I thought this was going to be, again, a throwaway WWF Superstars Sunday morning match, which I know mm-hmm. AEW doesn't do much of those. Right. When I thought that was going to be this, that was not this. This kid was very impressive.
No, he was absolutely, and I even have it written down. He's very agile and athletic. Like you said, big kid, looked good, sold well, except for the German suplex where he landed on his head, where him and Paige, neither one of them sold that, which maybe the one little thing I had an issue with in this match. It looked a little bit, I don't want to say dangerous, but it looked
looked dangerous.
Yeah, okay. It looked dangerous. But you know, at least sell it a little bit. But when he did sell stuff, it looked great.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's that old adage, you can get over without going over. And I think Adam Page did a heck of a job of helping this kid get over without going over.
Yeah. So Takeshita, you know, really, yeah, you're right. Got over. Impressive. So, and I mean, even to the point where they got some close false finishes where the crowd was rallying. Like it was like, you know, it had like that. Just that organic feel, like, oh my god, are they actually gonna, you know, is Hangman Page gonna be so distracted, continuing to glance up at Punk at the commentary, is he gonna be so distracted that he's gonna, you know, we're gonna pull a 1-2-3 kid over Razor type thing here? Yeah. So I mean, you know, good on them that they got me that kind of on mm-hmm. the edge of my seat. Jimmy, I ask you, so Adam Page, you know, he goes over by getting the W, of course,
mm-hmm.
but gets Takeshita over. I mean, I think he'll be mm-hmm. getting some more Dynamite matches. Mm-hmm. Do you like that, or we're 2 weeks out from this pay-per-view match where he's defending against CM Punk? Should your world champion be fighting this hard against somebody who, just for relative purposes of the audience, is very unknown?
Maybe that's a fair point. That's a fair point to make, that it may be a little bit too close, but at the same time, it opens the door for Punk to say, hey, look, This young fella here, you had trouble with. Yes, he's a big, agile kid, but he's still not as knowledgeable and as a veteran as well schooled as I am. You thought this kid took you to school?
Yeah.
Wait till you meet me. If you play it off that way. But my issue was more along the lines of last week. It felt like CM Punk was the heel coming out with the with the John Tavares shirt and the whole bit and getting the heel reaction in Long Island. This week, I couldn't tell who was the babyface and who was the heel when they had their confrontation afterwards, you know, and I know people say it's a different time now and you let the people decide, but at the same time, somebody has to act like a heel and somebody has to act like a babyface. You want to see the heel get their butt kicked.
Well, last week, Punk, he was playing heel because he's in Long Island. He seems to enjoy doing, you know, he did it the time before. He loves to amp up the hockey, but prior to that, excuse me, the weeks prior to that, and it seemed like Paige was like just taking a heel turn and he was cutting heel promos. So like, then tonight it wasn't as, it was more just kind of shades of gray. So, and that's where I'm wondering. I'm wondering like how this match is, like, is this match bringing people to the table? Are they buying it? Are they buying the show for this match? I don't know. I mean, cause I personally, I think this might be the end of Hangman Page as world champ. I just don't see them I don't see them, you know, putting CM Punk in that situation, having him lose at this point. I just don't see that happening. So,
And I don't think they've handled Hangman Page's championship reign very well so far, because like you said, he hasn't been on TV much. Yes, you don't want to overexpose your champion, but at the same time, you've got to make him at least visible in promos and anything, as opposed to just, you know, being there.
I do want to note that this was a nice piece of business, a kind of heel thing to do. Page beats Takeshita with the GTS.
Yes. Yeah. He definitely, using someone else's finishing move is kind of like a rubbing in your face. It is definitely heelish. But this audience, though, is a little bit different, though. They almost kind of like enjoyed it more than said, hey.
They pop. They didn't generate heat. They pop for it.
You know? Yeah, yeah. So the hardcore AEW audience kind of reacts to things differently sometimes. So,
I guess know your audience, know your room.
Exactly.
Read the room. Mm-hmm. All right, we get Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee. They're going up against the Workhorsemen. This is going to be, you know, tag team match, but basically to feature that Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee are going to get the win, doing a little of their own kind of doomsday situation of Lee. Having their opponent up and Swerve just taking the double stomp boots to him from the top rope. After the match, they get on the mic and they note how they are now in the top five. So they're eyeing tag team gold. Hobbs and Starks come out. They don't agree with these guys, thinking they're going to jump in front of them in the line. And then here comes Christian speaking for Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, and ultimately makes a challenge that we have a three-way tag team at Double or Nothing to see who truly is next in line.
Right. And I'll tell you what, I don't mind having this match which felt like an enhancement match, which is exactly what it was. And one thing the segment showed afterwards with the talking was, man, how good Christian is on the microphone. And we sometimes forget that, boy, can he talk. And for me, he stole the show, not the entire show, but stole the segment after with some of his mic work.
I agree. And I'm almost wondering, Jimmy, Christian is tremendous on the heel, tremendous on the mic. I think he's better on the mic when he's a heel, because it kind of lets him, he gives him a little bit more freer range. He's some more of that, you know, he has kind of a little bit of a natural kind of, his sense of humor can be a bit of asshole-ish in like a funny way. So yeah. I'm wondering if. And I've seen little hints of it at times over the weeks here with him and Jungle Boy and such. I'm almost wondering if a heel turn might be happening, if he might be stray from this unit.
I would love to see that happen, and I'd love to see him be the reason why Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy lose the tag titles. Maybe that's the way to get him to that heel side.
I would be all for that, to see Christian turn heel. I like, again, I'm always here for a heel Christian Cage. All right, up next, we got MJF. He's out there with Sean Spears, and then they bring out Wardlow, and Wardlow's going to take the 10 lashings of the belt, and we get 8 lashes in, and Wardlow is no selling these, Jimmy. He's not flinching. He's not grimacing. He is just all smiles. It's driving MJF on a wall that he is not torturing Wardlow. The 9th one, Wardlow sells a little bit, and then finally, and when it looks like that 10th one's going to come, MJF just kicks him in the balls and then proceeds to lash him probably 10 more times as he's down, choking him. Meanwhile, Wardlow's handcuffed this entire time.
Right.
MJF puts on the ring, you know, gives him the big punch in the face to that. I mean, so now all that's left is next week, a cage match between Wardlow and Spears with MJF as the ref. So basically a handicap match inside of a cage. But when we get through all that, it's Double or Nothing. MJF versus Wardlow, and I guess, like I said earlier in response to that super chat, for me right now, this is positioned as a number one, what I'm looking forward to.
I'm very much looking forward to it as well. I don't know if it's a number one, but right now it is the talk of the town, and one of the biggest reasons why, and you know, I talked about this earlier and I talked about it often, is heels need to be heels to get the audience. Here's a guy who's not a cool heel, MJF. And he's getting the, you know, last week we threw away, because that was an anomaly in Long Island, New York, where he's from. He could smack little babies and stuff like that. They probably still cheer him, you know, and take purses away from little old ladies and stuff. And but everywhere else, he's doing everything right to get booed and make people want to see him get his butt kicked. And they did exactly that tonight. And I can only imagine what's going to happen next week in the cage match when Wardlow is, you know, basically outnumbered inside that cage and set up for that. What we all hope is an ass whooping on MJF at the pay-per-view at Double or Nothing.
MJF is definitely one of the most polarizing guys right now in the wrestling business. I mean, he's not afraid. You know, as you said, he's not a cool heel. And that comes to, he's one of the few people in this day and age who's not afraid to be a heel. Right. You know, what ends up happening all too often is guys and girls, they want to play heel. They want to, okay, book me as the bad guy. But then once the match is over and they go through the curtain, they want to be able to go, to the merch table and take some pictures and make some money signing an 8x10 or making money, taking a selfie or be nice to get some more followers on their Twitter or Instagram. Right. MJF does not do that. I mean, there's even been video of him at meet and greets where he's being as much of an asshole. And there's a debate of, is this good business or not? He's being an asshole to kids. He'll sign or take the picture, but he's not getting down and on one knee and playing nice. And then of course, all the talk of his contract that he's going to go to WWE if the money's there. I mean, and is it a work? Is it a shoot? Did it start out as a work thing? Is it maybe becoming a little bit annoying to Tony Khan? Like, it's fascinating stuff is what I'll say.
That part of it, to be honest with you, does fascinate me that, that it's okay. It's one thing to go out in an interview and say, look, hey, the other guys are interested in me and blah, 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 but he's doing this on television and you know what I mean? And you talk about, is it a work? Is it a shoot? That one's got everybody guessing too. And if you've got people guessing, they're interested.
Yes. Yeah. When you have the boys in the locker room guessing, then you've got it. You've got
that's,
something.
And that's the beauty of it, because especially, there's a lot of fans out there who think they know, and there's a lot of boys who think they know, but sometimes, when you've got them fooled.
Right now, there's only two people that know, and it might only be one person that knows. Right now, the only two people that know are MJF and Tony Khan. And there's a chance that Tony Khan doesn't fully quite know. So if he don't know, everybody else just needs to calm down.
Yeah, exact. The mundo.
Yeah. All right, back to our Owen Hart tournament. Kyle O'Reilly versus Rey Fénix. Entertaining one for what this one was. A fun, crazy spot of walking the top rope and then Hurricane Rana from the top rope to the apron onto the floor. But ultimately, though, Kyle O'Reilly is going to make Fénix tap, so O'Reilly advances in this tournament. Anything of note you want to bring up on this one?
No, nothing. I thought it was a solid match. I thought with someone like Fénix in it, I expected to see some high flying, and we saw some high flying, but it didn't. It wasn't gratuitous just to get it in. I think Fénix picked his spots and picked them well. And Kyle O'Reilly is very underrated as far as with some people at least as far as his in ring ability is. And I love the reversal with that leg drop into the arm bar and the leg and all that stuff. It just, man, he's good smooth. Call. He's really smooth.
Good call. Real quick, back to the Wardlow MJF. MNECO one. Justin, any chance AEW swerves us and has MJF beat Wardlow, maybe make him stay his lackey until MJF wins the world title from Punk, or is that drawing it out too long? I think there actually is a chance. I think there is a chance that MJF could beat Wardlow for that point of, I do think MJF revisiting MJF and Punk, you could still make more money off. And especially when you add the world title in the factor, that's of course all assuming that Punk wins the world title. So, I mean, I think there is a chance that something like that could happen. It would have to be really, you have to creatively book how that finish is going to go down between MJF and Wardlow. But I'll say this. This MJF and Wardlow deal has been a long time coming. This is not something that they just decided, oh, we're going to do this. I mean, they've been building to it for over 2 years. They've known that this was the eventual finish line. So, and AEW, I think, has done a pretty good job overall on the long-term stories that they've had in place. I think they've done a pretty good job of how they finish things for the most part. So that gives me hope that whatever is going to happen at Double or Nothing will not be just throwing darts at the wall and seeing which index card it lands on, and that's the finish we're going on. I think they have a pretty clear idea of what they want to do. So that just gives me hope. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, and like you said, to have MJF beat Wardlow, it'd have to be very creative in order not to hurt Wardlow at all. Yeah, even if it is with that ring, which they put over huge tonight, knocking him out and getting the full three count against him. There's always a possibility, but I, to be perfectly honest, in my opinion, I don't see that happening.
Yeah. Real quick, too, earlier, back to Adam Page, want to get this Christopher Thacker super chat in. Thanks, Christopher. He says, my biggest issue tonight was with Page. Both the match and the GTS made him look weak. Mm-hmm. Well, again, the match, like I said, I can understand because he's having such a competitive match against somebody who doesn't have that credibility. But I think the GTS, I think that was a great move. You know, yeah. Use your opponent's deal.
Yeah, I agree with that. But at the same time, too, you know, I didn't think it was that bad for Page, considering the fact that, again, he elevated a young talent. You know, yes, he is your world champion. Maybe that's not the right person to have elevate the young talent. But at the same time, he did elevate that young man.
Talk about elevating young talent. My guy, Spencer Slade, Bernie in D.C., giving me a cheap plug here. Saturday night, this Saturday here in Pittsburgh. Ross Draver Ice Gardens, ECW used to run there. Well, this Saturday, Rhino's there, Sandman's there, Bill Alfonso's got a surprise tag team he's bringing. But Rhino, a former LaBar guy, going up against a current LaBar guy, Spencer Slade. Don't want to miss it. Fight TV. You can check it out this Saturday night. IWC Proving Ground.
Do it.
So there you go. There, elevating young talent. Dylan Matthews says Claudio, Cesaro, and Blackpool Club would be epic. That's interesting there.
It's interesting. I think Blackpool Club is fine the way it is right now. You don't want to over saturate it.
Well, they did add like at least three temporary members, at least by association here, just so they can even up their numbers as we have them out there. That, of course, being William Regal representing John Moxley, Brian Danielson, and then Moxley bringing Santana Ortiz and Eddie Kingston in the fold, who, of course, have had problems with the Jericho Appreciation Society. So Jericho's they're up at the ramp. Jericho gets on the mic and he starts delivering, starts blurring lines of reality, cutting a promo on William Regal, talking about how what wasted potential he is and was. He should have been a world champion 10 times over, but instead fired from every company he's ever worked for. Starts taking shots at William Regal's past issues with addiction at one point in his career. Then he starts to run down and go through highlighting the issues of every other person standing in the ring, even making reference. You know, he calls Brian Danielson a nerd, talks about Moxley and Moxley, of course, having gone to alcohol, gone and gotten alcohol addiction treatment late last year. Just calls him a royal flush of losers. I mean, Jericho really, I don't think he said anything that probably wasn't already approved or what have you, but certainly got the audience ooh and on with those sound bites.
Yeah, and sometimes some of the most ooh and ah worthy promos are ones that are basically, dipped in truth. And that's what we got from Jericho. And yes, as a heel, he brought up stuff that maybe, I don't want to say he crossed the line, but at the same time, it is a very touchy subject with a lot of people. And it hit close to home for a lot of people. And the response from Regal, though, was absolutely classic William Regal.
Yeah, so Regal fires back and basically says all those years traveling the road, all those years traveling and doing shows that Jericho was also on, that whenever Jericho's in the ring, Regal would go back to Jericho's bag, take his toothbrush and stick it up his ass. A very weird comeback, though, I have to say. And Regal's such a soft-spoken guy anyways, even on a microphone, and the crowd's got hecklers and such. It was a little... This is where it started to become a weird back and forth, honestly.
Yeah, but at the same time, the way Regal presented it, it almost sounded like, I don't want to say, it sounded so proper. You know what I mean? The way it was presented, but at the same time, it made you cringe and laugh at the same time.
And like I said ass, I think he said arse, didn't he? He said arse, I'm pretty sure.
I believe he did. Yeah, I believe he did.
So Jericho gets ready to challenge him to a stadium stampede. And Moxley shuts that down. Says, we're not doing your dumb sports entertainment stuff. We need to be in front of fans in a loud arena that wants violence. So they they didn't actually really name if it's a type of match. Basically, just said, call it whatever you want. We just need to have 5-on-5 violence. So it sounds like we're just going to have like a big old street fight. Right. Which, I mean, there's no DQs in AEW anyway. So it's, you know, all the same, but it's going to be a violent, you know, 10-man craziness.
Pretty much, but I like the way they're trying to establish this as the wrestlers versus the sports entertainers.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun, though.
That is a lot of fun. That is a lot of fun. So that's...
Especially coming from a sports entertainment referee like myself.
What if the Jericho Appreciation Society brought you, you're their Nick Patrick, you're their ref, and then...
Oh, no.
The Blackpool Combat Club brings Bryce Remsburg or Aubrey.
Don't give him any ideas.
I think that would be great.
Oh my goodness. Hey, I broke a picket line once. Why not?
That's true. Yeah. I remember your sad story too. You just got married. I remember your sad story.
Yeah. It's funny how that wasn't originally scheduled until I made a joke about it. But anyways.
Oh, you can't. Oh, no. Now you have to tell me the backstory.
Oh, the backstory. Well, I just got married to Audra, and we'd gone on our honeymoon, and JR was like, how much time do you need for your honeymoon? I said, we'd like to do 2 weeks. And he said, yeah, man, go, just do what you got to do. As long as you're back after 2 weeks, just let us know when. So we took our 2 week honeymoon, and obviously I can't watch wrestling on my honeymoon.
No.
So I don't know what's going on. So when I come back, they've got this referee strike thing going on after several weeks of being abused. You know, they decided they're going on strike. So I came back, and, you know, and I said, hey, Jimmy, how was the honeymoon? And blah, blah, blah. You know, everybody's like, and I run into Hunter. They say, hey, Hunter. He goes, hey, Corduroy, what's going on? How was the honeymoon? I said, it was great. He says, how does it feel coming back and being on strike? I said, and as a joke, I just said to him, hey, Hunter, I can't go on strike. I just got married. I can't afford to go on strike. And he went, come with me. So I just followed him, and he took me straight to JR, and he said, hey, Jimmy had a great idea. And I'm like, what idea did I have? He says, he just got married. He just got back. That's the story. He's the one, you know, regular referee who breaks the picket line and referees matches with the scab referees. And then, you know, we could use that somehow at the pay-per-view. And I refereed the six-pack challenge at the pay-per-view as the only referee. And I got dragged out by the striking referees and beat up. And couldn't finish the match. And
what year was that?
Oh my God, 99.
I'm about to say you better not balk on the year if your wife.
No, exactly. Especially if she's around. Yeah, it was September, the end of September 99. And the funny thing is, the next night on Raw, they settle it by having all the officials in Vince's office, and Vince saying, "Oh, okay, guys, whatever you guys want, we're squashing this now. You guys are back to work." Blah blah blah. So as we're getting ready to shoot this thing, and Vince looks over at me and goes, Jimmy doesn't look beat up enough. And we can't. So what do? They put me in a sling just to make it look like I got beat up a little bit anyway. So, and I think that was a bit of a rib, and they said, put it on his right arm because I was right-handed. So then, you know, I had to go out and referee and with a sling and left-handed. And
See, it's funny. Cause like, that's at a time, and I can remember, you know, I can remember whatever grade in school I'm in at the time. I could like name every ref for a point there. Mm-hmm. I could see the headshot of any ref. Mm-hmm. That's Jimmy Corderas. That's Jack Doan. Mm-hmm. That's Earl Hebner. That's Mike Chioda. That's Timmy White. That's Teddy Long. Like you could see any of them. And now we're at a point where like referees don't even allowed to have names, you know, like at least in WWE, we don't say the ref's names.
They occasionally do. But
often than not, they don't.
No, they don't. And then
Vince used to, when Vince was on commentary, he used to even say the ref's names.
Right.
You know, I don't know why the new edict is. We can't.
Now, I get it. We're not the ones drawing money, but at the same time, you know, the supporting actors get named.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, if you're seeing the same few guys in the ring with your favorite superstars every week, mm-hmm. I mean, you at least have to identify who the hell they are.
I would think so.
Yeah. You know. Anyway, okay.
Well, and then get your face blurred on the video game. So
yeah. Face blurred on the video game. Mm-hmm. All right. Up next, we get the another. We're now on the women's bracket for the Owen Hart and the other Joker. Mm-hmm. That's a match we got to have here. We got Dr. Britt Baker going up against Maki Ito. So they show a quick little, you know, video showing a little flashback of the history that she has with Britt of being former partners. This is not going to last long, though. This is going to be the lockjaw submission from Britt. She's going to advance. She advances and go up against Toni Storm. Toni Storm does come out, look at her at the apron, kind of have a little stare down just to build to that. I mean, this is what it is.
Underwhelming.
Yeah.
For a surprise for a Joker, I thought. And also it just fits that mold that the match bridging the gap between the Regal segment and the main event. It's kind of like thrown out there and that's it.
Yeah.
That's how it felt to me anyways.
Yeah. I mean, again, no personal disrespect to Maki Ito, but I just.
Yeah. I know.
To some fans, that was probably, it probably delivered on some levels. And that was great. But to me, I don't know who I was expecting.
I don't either, but it wasn't that. Exactly. It just felt underwhelming to me, to be bluntly honest.
Yeah. So that's what it was. Then we get a segment that, again, I'm looking at the clock and I'm watching how this next segment's going. And I'm like, do we need to be doing this or can we just get the main event 5 more minutes? Right. But we have Tony Schiavone in the ring. He's kind of like pumping Double or Nothing. It's like the reason to get him out there. He gets interrupted by Serena Deeb. Mm-hmm. Serena Deeb is very offended by what Tony said on commentary last week, basically saying she doesn't have a shot to beat Thunder Rosa. Mm-hmm. So she's mad about that. She basically, Tony Schiavone, you don't have no credibility. You suck, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Calls out Dustin Rhodes, who's also been like the mentor now of Thunder Rosa. He comes out. She runs him down. She then proceeds, again, to talk about, you know, Jericho and Regal doing this, reverting back to talk about careers and what have you in history. Mm-hmm. Serena Deeb starts to revert back to history, saying, Dustin, you know what I went through. You know what I had to do to fight and survive and be respected in a time when women's wrestling wasn't respected. You know, referencing her time in WWE, I had to get, you know, my head shaven. Mm-hmm. She was straight at society. And I had to get breast implants to appease old perverts. Dustin, you have no balls. And then after all this is going, after a few minutes, Thunder Rosa finally comes out, but then Dustin stops Thunder Rosa from fighting her while he's doing that. He gets attacked by Serena Deeb. All this to kind of remind you that we have this issue here with Thunder Rosa and Serena Deeb, which I get that intent, but Jimmy, I just felt like this was just going on and on and on. And again, I'm watching the clock like, we still have Adam Cole and Jeff Hardy. I don't want that match to go 4 minutes.
Exactly. It was the same feeling. I kept looking at at the time, and I was going, really? Are they going to go long tonight? You know, and when we get to the main event, we'll talk about it. But they did mention during the main event, you know, this match will end when it ends. It's no time constraints or something along those lines. They said that, you know, the 10 o'clock hour wouldn't be a factor, basically, is what they were alluding to, but it was.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, like you said, sometimes you have to cut things when stuff is running long.
I'm just watching this, and that's all I can think, because I'm like, all right, we have this Owen Hart tournament match between Adam Cole and Jeff Hardy, two guys who are legit over like Rover with the audience. Mm-hmm. And to the best of my knowledge, I know Adam Cole has worked with Matt Hardy, obviously, dating back in the Ring of Honor days. I don't think I've ever seen a singles match anywhere of Adam Cole versus Jeff. So I'm like, you have this rare chance of a first time ever singles match in a tournament that means something. Mm-hmm. Like, again, it's just like a main event that actually has like a lot of nice pieces. And I'm like, and we're just the clock is just ticking down.
No, I heard you. I hear you.
You know.
Yeah. Right. Go ahead.
No, so I was just gonna say, so let's go to the match here. So we get that. So Jeff Hardy's out first, and I almost wonder if this was an audible call. Jeff Hardy's out first, and Adam Cole just attacks him before Jeff gets to the ring. And I was like, maybe that was an audible call to give them one more minute rather than having Cole's entrance.
You and me are on the same wavelength on that one. I thought, you know, let's get this thing, let's get the party started because we haven't got much time.
Right. So they do that. So they get started hot, and this match does end up even having a commercial in it. They do the picture in picture. But fun match to watch these two clash of styles again, to watch two guys at total different points in their career. Mm-hmm. But again, both over. Ultimately, though, Jeff's going to miss the Swanton bomb. That's going to allow him to get in position for Adam Cole to hit the boom with the knee. 1, 2, 3, Adam Cole wins. So Adam Cole advances after the match. You know, Matt and Jeff, Matt's kind of helping Jeff. They're kind of staring off at Adam while they're distracted with Adam. Young Bucks come out. attack the Hardys, hit the BT trigger on Matt. Then all hell starts breaking loose after that. Then we have a Fish and O'Reilly out there. We end up, then here comes Darby and Sting, and it's just all chaos. So they end up getting everything in by 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Again, continuing to water the seeds of the Bucks and the Hardys. Cole advances. So everything mm-hmm. does get accomplished. But again, just as a fan of Cole and Hardy, I would have loved to seen 5, 6, 7, just a little bit more time where they could have relaxed and it didn't have to move so fast.
No, I absolutely agree. And it could have told, I get the story being told that, wow, Jeff is still selling stuff from last week's match.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean? And that is a good story being told. And that could have been told in a more drawn out process and made more meaningful. And again, it felt at the end afterwards, trying to cram too much afterwards. Yes, you're trying to get to the point with the Bucks versus the Hardys. Yes, you're trying to get to certain seeds planted for the pay-per-view and that sort of thing. But it just felt like too much happening afterwards made you forget about the actual match itself.
Yeah. So again, a lot of, you know,
moving parts,
moving parts, you know, overbooked. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Next week's Dynamite is going to be very interesting again. Like I said, they're going to be in Vegas. It is their go home show with only, you know, we're always used to go home in the WWE world, especially with the Raw, maybe of, okay, you're giving yourself 6 days. It's a Wednesday. It's only a couple days to get people to convince to get into Double or Nothing. So we'll be extremely interested in the decisions they make next week with all these top major stories, the timing of it, obviously semifinals for the Owen Hart, just to figure out who was going to be in the finals. Fun note that I wrote down too with Jeff Hardy having this match. I can't remember if we brought it up in weeks prior. Jeff, the only one in any of these tournaments that actually has a single match with Owen Hart in his career.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I get, like you said, I'm not sure if it was brought up, but that is a classic, amazing moment. If you're talking about who could be the guy, I'm still looking at Adam Cole if you're asking me who I'm picking for this thing.
Yeah. Right now, looking at the bracket, that's kind of where I'd have to lead to as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, quite frankly, again, looking at the bracket, I could see his better half and Britt being the one on the women's side.
Yeah, you never know. And you know, it's going to be interesting. Joe versus Kyle next week, right? Mm-hmm. And can you Undisputed Elite members facing each other in the finals?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
So that was your AEW Dynamite from Houston. So again, lots to unpack from the show. If you missed it, it's definitely one to go back and check out. There's a lot of things to, as we just covered, a lot of things to get your eyes on or your ears on to hear. I guess as we started with the WWE talk, I guess we're going to end it here with the super chat from Allison, 1999. Wow, Allison, thank you. She says, "Do you think Naomi's husband is upset with her for walking out with Sasha? But I don't blame the women. But I was them and walk out to Ric Flair wants to wrestle. If he does, they should find someone his age to wrestle." The Naomi thing, I'm not going to speculate on their personal, I don't think they're going to, first off, I don't think the Usos are getting punished at all. I mean, the Usos, they're right there with Roman. They seem pretty untouchable any which way. So the Flair thing, as we said, I think they need to find somebody for Flair, obviously, and Sting's the best one I can come up with. So.
Yeah. No, like I said, I was thinking wishful thinking, as we mentioned earlier, Brett can't do it, but that was just wishful thinking. But, you know, bringing up Sting, from all angles you're looking at it, from someone he has a history with, from someone that, like you said, FTR needs approval, sign off from Tony Khan. So with Sting, that would be awesome. That would be perfect.
Yeah. The worry is, like, again, all we know is that Flair's, like, you know, we don't know, like, we don't know if FTR has been signed off or whatever. Like, the worry is going to be is, like, if this thing gets closer and they don't have the match figured out or they don't have an opponent, it's like, well, you've already kind of got everybody now on the hook. But, like, Rick's having a match. So, like, who are you going to put out there?
Honky.
When in doubt,
go to Honky.
Allison follows up, says maybe Charlotte can talk some sense into him. Whatever Rick's decided to do, he's decided to do.
Yeah, I don't think Charlotte, I don't think anybody could talk Rick out of anything.
Especially talk him out of performing. That's just not
exactly.
you know,
yeah,
it's not going to happen, I don't think. Jimmy, any final words, final thoughts, final plugs?
No, I thought tonight's AEW, the tournament matches were all pretty much the right decisions and who went over and stuff like that. And I thought in-ring work was pretty solid for the most part. I mean, obviously you could nitpick on the little things that we nitpick on, but at the same time, it was an entertaining show. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, same. Like I said, same. This is all, there's ups and downs to it, but overall a lot to write home about, a lot to to talk about, as we just did for the last hour and 9 minutes. So
there you go.
Fun stuff. Again, thanks to all of you. As always, it's a wonderful the live chat that's always going on. To those of you that are listening or watching after the fact, we appreciate you as well. Do all the littlest things. You know, we have the wonderful sponsor Manscaped, who's with us every single Wednesday for a reason. The Ref and Rants, of course.
Yes.
Jimmy Corderas. You know, like the wonderful sponsorship and everything we have, and that stuff goes a long way. If you guys can keep doing what you're doing, like, comment, share, tell a friend, it's working. Everything continues to grow. As always, I love it when you tweet. I love waking up on Thursdays getting tweets of where you're watching the podcast, where you're listening to the podcast. That's always just...
we have another super chat.
We do have another super chat. I always love when that happens. All right, this one's coming for you, Jimmy.
Uh-oh.
$5 for Ryan. Jimmy, what was it like reffing the Public Enemy versus Acolytes? So before Jimmy answers this, if you don't know this, Public Enemy and Acolytes have it's like Public Enemy's first like night out there in WWE. They're supposed to do the job to the Acolytes. They don't want to do the job, and so Bradshaw and Farouk said, okay, well, let's see how you handle this.
Well, okay, let me put it to you this way. I was given the finish as normal in the back, and they were going to get put through a table. The Public Enemy, you know, was Acolytes are going to put him through a table for the finish. The referee always heads down to the ring first, so I don't know what happened in the back. And apparently, as they hit Public Enemy's music, who is entering first, they said to John, turn around, turn to Bradshaw and say, oh, by the way, we're not doing the finish, and then walk out for their entrance. And Bradshaw was like, what? And then hearing it from Bradshaw afterwards, Ron turns to me and says, what'd he say? He said, they said they're not doing the finish. Oh, okay. And then the Acolyte music hits and they come down to the ring and it's just on like Donkey Kong. They're pounding the living, you know, snot out of these guys. And, you know, I'm trying to officiate this match, but at the same time, nobody's listening to anything. They're just beating the living piss out of these guys and blah, blah, blah. They finally go into this, you know, through a table and whatever the deal was, and or finish, whatever. Or they didn't even get to the finish. And I hear finally on my earpiece, as you know, referees wear the earpiece, Mr. Briscoe, Gerald Briscoe, says to me, hey, Jimmy, you may want to end this match anytime now. So I just basically rang the bell to end the match, as just throwing it out because nobody was listening to anything. And you know, and I'm wondering what the heck's going on. You know what I mean? And apparently they shook their hand, said thank you, and walked away. And that was it in the back afterwards. And I get to the back, of course, and Briscoe saying, what were you doing? I said, they were just fighting. It was a fight. What, do you want me to break it up? He said, no, ring the bell. I said, it didn't matter.
You were so caught up and entertained, you just stand there watching.
Basically, I was sitting there, ooh, that looks stiff. You know, pretty much. Oh, that looked like it connected. Wow. You know,
see, I was, you just said it. I was trying to remember if you guys were wearing the IFB earpieces at that point. Because there was a period of time before that where you guys didn't have those.
No.
Once you're out there, you're out there with on an island of your own. You don't have the back to communicate to.
No, you have the timekeeper at ringside giving hand signals for times. And if it's like, you guys got to go home. It was. That's what you saw. You saw the pen or pencil in the mouth. So that means go home now.
So Mark Eaton was putting a lot of pens in his mouth.
Yep. Yep.
Where is he at these days?
He's somewhere in PA.
Is he? He's in Pennsylvania.
He used to be. Oh man, I know he's got a farm somewhere.
He's always one. I mean, when he left the company or however it happened. He's one that's been really quiet. I've always thought, like, man, he'd be a fascinating guy to talk to. He's
Goodness. If there's anybody who's got stories, Mark's got some stories.
Yeah,
definitely.
Sitting there next to Howard Finkel for all those years. And, you know, then Vince and Lawler on the other side over here at the commentary desk. And
he had headphones on, so he was hearing what was coming in from the back. So
yeah. Good times. Well, Jimmy, that was great. We ended on a Jimmy story. I like that. It's all about 1999 tonight. I think the Public Enemy Acolytes thing was 99. Your honeymoon was 99. The strike was 99.
So after this is over, we're going to party like it's 1999.
There we are. Yeah. Allison gets the final word. She goes, reminds me of the movie I think she meant the movie The Wrestler. Yeah, Ric Flair. I've already seen The Wrestler. I've already seen Randy the Ram.
Yeah, there you go. Tremendous. That. Thank you, Allison.
All right. Like, share, comment, do what you got to do. We appreciate all the love as always. Jimmy's Ref and Rants, check him out every single morning all across his social media. It's a great 60 seconds to get you started with your morning coffee. I'm at Justin Labar. I'll talk to you guys next Friday on Busted Open, Friday morning. Saturday, like I said, if you can get to Ross Draver right outside of Pittsburgh, myself taking Spencer Slade to the ring up against Rhino, plus the Sandman's there, plus a lot of other great action. IWCWrestling.com if you want to get any last minute tickets, or you can check it out on Fight TV online. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night. We'll talk to you next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.